This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. No Kelly Bidlet today. Kelly on vacation. Kelly on his way or already has arrived in Nash Vegas in Nashville for a little trip with the boys. So we wish Kelly well. Hope all the travels are safe. Kelly will be back with us, I guess, a week from Monday. That's the story. Taking today off and then all of next week. That doesn't mean he didn't leave all the good guests behind, because he did. Jensen Lewis is going to join us. Jensen, you just heard on By the Books, co-host with Dave Ross of that show that leads into ours. Peter Fornatale will join us this hour to talk horse racing. You're like, Peter Fornatale, why are we talking horse racing? There is a global scandal in horse racing. Oh, my goodness. We got to get to the bottom of this. Again, I mentioned it the other day, but he's from Sky Sports Racing. He's going to help us talk about this because I'm not a horse guy, so I'm going to miss some of the details. But essentially, six horses, four of which finished in first place, four won their races, long odds, all trained by the same dude, odds dropped, heavy betting in Britain. It's a whole thing. It's a whole attack on the sport of horse racing and the integrity. Peter will talk us through that. Jordan Sherwood, UFC 330 in Philadelphia, PA this weekend. And then Chrissy Andrews, my mishpucha, his triumphant return to the show after how many years has this been now? A few years? Not on the network? Triumphant return. He has just written his fourth, count them, fourth book. First it was Then One Day, then it was Then One Year, and now it's Then One Life. Also has a novel on the side as well, Then One Life. Chrissy will be in studio to talk about that, talk about all things betting. Looking forward to that. And then, of course, it's Fezzik Fridays, the star of the show, Steve Fezzik, on Fezzik Fridays. Everything on his mind. And apparently those two are going to have to meet. Chrissy's going to leave the studio while Fezzik gets in, and that could be exciting in and of itself. Maybe we'll have a camera rolling outside the studio. So much to get to with all those guests. So much to get to here. I got to pack it in real quick into the first segment. Let me just start with football last night. NFL preseason week number one gets underway in earnest. Again, overreactions left and right. But if you're fans or have bets, season-long bets of some of these teams, you might get excited about some of the performance. Arizona Cardinals fans, that was, I don't know, it might not get any better than this. But that was a heck of a performance from Jeremiah Love. 11 carries, 58 yards, 5.3 yards per carry. Three catches for 14 yards in the Cardinals game against the Raiders last night. Nothing to be upset about there. He looked great. Raiders, on the other hand, Kirk Cousins looked great in his one drive, 10 plays, 68 yards. 68-yard drive, I should say. He completed five of passes for 50 yards, 13-yard touchdown pass to Michael Mayer as well. And then in came Fernando Mendoza, first pick in the draft out of Indiana, the national championship quarterback for the Indiana Hoosiers. And first drive wasn't great. Two incompletions. Raiders forced a punt. Second drive, though, completed a 19-yard pass to rookie wideout Malik Benson. Fit the ball through a really tight window. Looked good there. And then after running back Mike Washington Jr. scampered for 53 yards, Mendoza zipping the ball to Beck for a 6-yard touchdown pass on third down. Third drive then was a three and out. Fourth drive, just like the second drive, really, really good from Mendoza. Put the Raiders into field goal range, finished the night completing 10 of 16 passes for 97 yards. He did struggle against pressure, if you were looking for a negative. 38.9% of dropbacks, he was pressured. He went 2 for 6 for 11 yards, 42.4 passer rating, and he was sacked once. So there was good, there was bad, but again, let's not read into too much of any of that in any of these preseason games. Just a couple other notes from last night. Drew Aller of the Steelers led him to three touchdowns in his first appearance. There was a third and seven in the third quarter. We connected with a fourth-round receiver, Caden Waitland, where 74-yard catch and run. Two plays later, Aller kept the ball, read option, ran it into the end zone for a three-yard score. Next drive, Aller and Wetchen connected again midway through the fourth, this time in the end zone, five-yard touchdown. Then Aller, third touchdown of the night, four-yard pass, rookie fullback Riley Nowakowski. So nice game from Drew Aller in the race to back up Aaron Rodgers. And then the only other note I would sort of say, Dejon Stribling of the Niners, who a lot of fantasy players have seized on, and the with the Ricky Pearsall injury or surgery ending season, not addressing the knee from last year in Pearsall's case. Stribling played the first three series for the Niners, all against starting Titans D-backs, seven catches, 62 yards before calling it a night. Also included in that, a great 32-yard over-the-shoulder catch, an 11-yard catch and run for a first down to set up San Francisco's first touchdown. So some of the highlights from last night. If you are looking to bet tonight there's only three games. Dolphins Commanders, Malik Willis going for the Dolphins. He's set to start. Jeff Hafley, head coach, stating that the wider roster should be ready to play, expecting to include key offensive pieces like running back Devon Achane tonight for the Dolphins. Skill players expected to see limited action under the new coaching staff's baseline plan, but they will play because he said Coach Hafley noted a need for extensive reps for a younger roster. So he wants overall starter exposure, even though it's going to be brief. Commanders, yeah, not so much. Nobody's playing. Jaden Daniels embroiled in his off-the-field LSU shenanigans, which we'll get into later. Not a good look. Not a good look. No big players on the Commanders expected to play. So Dolphins expected to go with starters for a few series. Commanders, not so much. Broncos, Falcons tonight. No Bo Nix, but Broncos' other starters are expected to play roughly 10 to 15 snaps in this ball game. Kevin Stefanski for the Falcons said he plans to give his starters some run tonight and then again in week three of the preseason. That's how Stefanski plans it for the Falcons. So they're going to, it's going to be a brief stint tonight for the starters, but they'll play nonetheless. He says they'll see one series or about 10 plays, whichever comes first. Tua Tagovailoa will get the start. No Michael Penix Jr. He will not play as he continues recovering from his knee injury. And then, by the way, the Broncos 4.5-point favorites in that ball game against the Falcons in Atlanta tonight. Buccaneers, Jets, the third of the three. Buccaneers not expected to play any of the regular season starters in tonight's game in MetLife. Head coach Todd Bowles says he's going to sit everybody, including the likes of Baker Mayfield. So you'll get Connor Bazelak and undrafted rookie Jalen Daniels handling the snaps. Jake Browning has a back injury, so he will not be playing. So it's younger players, those fighting for roster spots. Reuben Bain Jr., their first-round draft pick, expected to see little to no action. And unlike Tampa, Jets, they've announced the starters will play at least for a series or two. So Aaron Glenn saying, yeah, let's see what Geno Smith, Breece Hall, and Garrett Wilson and all these guys look like for a couple series. Kenyon Sadiq, their first-round draft pick, not going to play. Sadiq with a core surgery hernia issue this offseason. By the way, I don't know if, Jets favored by 5.5 in this ball game against the Bucs. A lot of that informed by the way the coaches are handling it with starters tonight. But the word out of the Jets camp, the big word, is that their first-round draft pick, David Bailey, absolutely having his way with the Bucs offensive line and joint practices this offseason. So they're very excited about that. Those are the three games tonight, preseason. More games, of course, tomorrow. Tennis, whole bunch to talk about here. Yesterday, Iga Swiatek wins the Canadian Open. It's her eighth 1,000 out of 10. Well, she's won 12 1,000s because she's won some multiple times. But of the 10 1,000 tournaments, that's the level right before slams, this is the eighth different one she's won. She beats Elena Rybakina in straight sets. I immediately, after the first set yesterday, grabbed some 7-1s on Iga to win the U.S. Open that were available at Skins. She wins it in straights. BetMGM had 7-1 available. I'm not sure what's available. Best price, shop around. But I said it earlier in the week, her match against Marta Kostyuk this past Saturday, something unlocked after the first set. You could almost see it live if you're a keen observer of her. And whatever was happening in between her ears seemed to just disappear. And it was vintage Iga. I'm making her sound like she's 40 years old. She's only 25. But I made the bet 7-1 Iga Swiatek to win the U.S. Open. Zach Cohen, our buddy, said that he found some 8-1s. This was yesterday, so I shop for the best price. Get it while you can. I'm not sure you can still get the 7-1 or 8-1, but if you can get anything above 5-1, man, grab it. Yesterday, 3-1 in tennis. We had four picks on the show. 3-1, including a +230 winner on Martin Landaluce. Landaluce, I believe, is the way you pronounce that. So big day in tennis. The only person that lost for us was Adrian Mannarino. Hit on Taylor Townsend yesterday as well. Hit on Dion Parris. We have one holdover pick from yesterday, Talon Griekspoor. You can still bet that. Again, VSiN subscribers, it pays to be a subscriber. VSiN.com/picks, because honestly, that's the only price right now that is anywhere close to where I gave it out to subscribers at VSiN. Greek Sport, I got it minus 101. It's about minus 105. These others, man, I don't think you can play them anymore. In fact, if you're doing this right, I would just suggest to you, you shouldn't play them anymore. But again, those interested, for it pays to subscribe. It's sort of my billboard for why you should subscribe at VSiN.com/picks. Senja Krause on the ladies' side, minus 115 last night is what I gave it at. She's minus 145 now, 30 cents CLV. What could go wrong? But I wouldn't play her at that price. And then on the men's side, two plays, Michael Zhang minus 130 versus Fabian Morajan, and Coleman Wong minus 131 versus Daniel Altmaier. Minus 130 and minus 131 have turned into minus 154 and minus 172. So I don't think we can play any of those three anymore, I'm sorry to say. Again, pays to be a subscriber, VSiN.com/pick. Sorry about that. We don't usually play four favorites in a day. It's kind of a rare day anyway, and three of those have just absolutely soared off the page. Detroit Tigers win another series, beat the Guardians in the rubber match yesterday, a shutout with no strikeouts. Unbelievable. There's only been nine of those since 1995. Incredible. Tigers have had three of them, by the way. That was the first one, I believe, in 9 years, maybe 12 years, if I'm not mistaken. Tigers win another series this month. We have them at 60-1, of course. They are now 8-3. They're two wins behind the Tampa Bay Ray leading August 10-1 Rays. All looking good. Now it's a three-game set against the White Sox in Detroit. Again, the Tigers right now are on the inside looking out of the American League playoff picture. They'd be the third wild card, but they're 2.5 games behind the White Sox. You sweep, you're in the division lead. Looking at least to win 2 of 3, not only for themselves to be as close as 1.5 after this series, but also for our bet, of course. Coming back on A Numbers Game.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget our VSiN Pro early bird special offer. Full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for just $175, and you get it all. Daily best bets, betting splits data, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video access, NFL betting guide, really every betting guide we'd ever do. But this one is through the Super Bowl for $175, VSiN Pro early bird special, VSiN.com/subscribe. Check it out. Now, usually I go to the old Twitter machine here at this point and read off some tweets that are dedicated to this show. But a bit of a firestorm was started this morning on the show that preceded us on By the Books with Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis. And the feed is overrun with some stuff. We'll get the background here from Jensen on it. Jensen Lewis joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow Jensen on Twitter at JLou50. You got to write out the 50, though. Don't just put 50 in there. Got to spell it out. Jensen, good morning to you. What did you do this morning? What happened here?
But always great to be with you. So I'll set it up. I was co-hosting on LV Network Radio yesterday, and we had a chance to interview Minnesota Twins manager Derek Shelton. He has a weekly appearance on our Loud Out show, and he is live, Gil, from the outfield of the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, because obviously the Twins and the Phillies are playing there, and kind enough to give us the expanse of everything. We're talking Moonlight Graham, you know, talking the house, you can, you know, all the things that you can do and soaking in the atmosphere. And of course, in his week before, a great colleague and friend Ryan Spielborgs and CJ Nikowski asked him, okay, are you play catch or have a catch when you're talking about it? And so I just threw it out into, you know, the X-verse, Twitterverse, whatever we're calling it now, this morning, tagging all of our weekday talent and our weekend talent. Okay, you know, are you team play catch? Are you team have a catch? And I have to say, with about 50% of the precincts reporting here, Gil, we are too close to call.
Come on. No, you're not.
Which way it
are
is.
Are you really? It's too close to call?
I mean,
I think we're leaning
play catch here. That's at least mine. What are you, Gil? Are you have a catch or play catch?
Okay, let me just say this. I probably didn't say either. I probably was like, hey, you want to go outside? And we just have the mitts and the ball. We probably understand what we're doing anyway, so we probably don't say either. But I will tell you what we absolutely have never said in our lives, nor have I ever heard growing up, was have a catch. What is that? Nobody says that. Come on, stop it. What American-born human ever said that? It doesn't happen. It's play catch. Let's go play catch. Play catch sounds stupid too, by the way. But I would take that over have a catch.
Jonathan Von Tobel with a winning response to Dustin Sweetelson so far. Dustin Sweetelson, I don't know if this is to stir the pot further, but Dustin did chime in and he said, have a catch. Playing catch makes the coolest thing in the world sound lame. And then JVT with a very firm response of, I'd understand you had a good summer of Swede, but let's not try too hard and be contrarian on purpose. I don't know if this will sweep the rest of the day, Gil, but I apologize for the feed being littered with responses one way or the other.
This is one of those, I'll leave it at this because I don't want to belabor it, but this is one of those where I don't even think it's a binary choice. It's like when people say, do you say soda or do you say pop? I'm like, I don't think I say either. I was like, you want a Coke? Right. And I say, I think I would say to my buddy, you want to go up, throw the ball? I think I would say that. I don't think I'd say either of them. But have a catch. Perfect. Get out of here. Have a catch. Nobody. I think we settled that. Before we get into your plays, Jensen, by the way, thank you for joining us because I know you just did the show. And so this is extra time for you. And it's added time. You don't know how much the refs are going to put on the clock sometimes with this time.
Right.
So I appreciate it. I just seized on the Detroit Tigers briefly there before the break. Once again, I don't know, I have them for most wins in August at 60-1. They are 2 wins behind the 10-1 Rays, who thankfully are out of Sacramento now, so they can actually go play real baseball teams. But I'm just curious, because Joe Sheehan and I have a little bit of a disagreement on this, and I'm curious where you stand on this. At the trade deadline, when I gave out that pick, I said, here's what I believe the Tigers are going to do. And this was because 2 years ago they traded Jack Flaherty to the Dodgers at this point. By the way, they end up getting Flaherty back, by the way, as it turned out. But they traded him to the Dodgers 2 years ago, and they accidentally made the playoffs anyway. And I think with that as a backdrop, I think what I said was they're going to trade Tarek Skubal because it's the responsible thing to do. But I actually think they believe they're going to make the playoffs, that they can thread this needle. Joe says that no. Which side do you come on?
Oh, I think they do. And it won't shock me if they contend for this division title end.
No, he believes they will contend. The point is, do you think that their mindset was, we're still going for it even though we're trading him?
100%. And you illustrated it perfectly, the responsible thing to do. We did not pull an Angels of years past by not trading Shohei Ohtani and thinking that all was going to end well. It did not. And we obviously know where they are as a franchise right now. The responsible thing was done. They also knew, though, Gil, they were getting Jackson Joe back to bolster that rotation. And then, having the emergence, I think, of Troy Melton and Cater Montero to go along with Bromber Valdez, you had the depth in so many words and the personnel in a very weak Central Division. And as you know, we've talked about it for months here, it is a wide-open American League. So 100% think they contend. I love your 60-1. I have Tampa 10-1 for most wins in August. I even couldn't imagine a perfect road trip. You would think you slip up somewhere, but the way that offense is going from Coors to Sacramento, job well done by that pitching staff being able to limit both offenses for the home teams. But yes, Detroit is hitting. And now, Gil, this is a larger sample here even before the All-Star break, but more so the start of the second half into where we are currently. The offense is now hitting the way I think they envisioned it would at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's coincided with this rotation turn in and turn out. They have the number one rotation ERA in baseball right now. And I know there's part of Tarek Skubal is involved in that, but still that's a credit to this group as of late. They have the number one and the lowest, I believe, team ERA in the month of August at 2.20. There's only three teams that have a team ERA under three. That's Detroit, Atlanta, and Boston. So, yep, they're right in this thing, and they're going to be a handful.
Yeah, and again, by sequencing, by Pythag, by things that I look at, they should be 20 games over 500 at this point, literally 20 games. And they had their expected WOBA, which obviously Tarek Skubal had nothing to do with, hitting was top five in all of Major League Baseball heading into the month. So anyway, let's get to your picks. By the way, Jackson Jobe, who you refer to, hit triple digits on the gun in his first start back from Tommy John. He is on the hill today against the White Sox in the first of a three-game set, which is huge in the AL Central, with the Tigers 2.5 back and now inhabiting the third wild card position. Unbelievable. Cardinals.
It is.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, it's unbelievable to see where this division has been. And considering that Tigers blew the 15.5 game lead last year, and they may come back from double digits this year, you can't write that script. It's just unbelievable what they've done.
Cardinals, Cubs at Wrigley, day game at Wrigley. As the folks who are in the Midwest who love the Cardinals and Cubs say, it's the greatest rivalry in all of sports, which I always snicker at because I'm like, really, is it? Not even best in baseball, I wouldn't think. But they think it's that. Cubs are minus 175 favorites. Cubs having a great month. How are you playing this one?
I played an alternate run line at -1 at $1.24. Cubs' last 8 of their 10 wins at home, Gil, since July 1st, have been by at least 2 runs. They get Matthew Liberatore on the other side, who's got about a 6 ERA in his last 4 starts, and the Cardinals have lost 3 of those last 4. So pretty straight up here. I'll ride the hot offense, albeit hat tip to Cade Cavalli. He was absolutely filthy yesterday. I had that no-hitter late into the game. I like the Cubs offense early and often against Matthew Liberatore this afternoon at Wrigley.
Like the Cardinals, Marlins and Reds are on the outside looking in of the NL wildcard picture. You have a total play in this ballgame today.
I usually don't go unders at Great American Ballpark, but when I get this kind of swing and miss capability, Gil, with Sandy Alcantara and Chase Burns going head-to-head, I'll take it. By the way, Sandy Alcantara, 3 straight scoreless starts in which he's allowed just 11 hits in his last 20 innings, 10 total runs combined in those 3 starts between those teams. Under 8.5 is going to be the play because we get Chase Burns on the other side. Just a smidge under a 3 ERA in his last 4 starts, but Gil, 9 straight starts at Great American Ballpark, allowing 3 earned runs or fewer.
Alcantara might not be the best pitcher in baseball, but man, when he's good, he is good. That's for sure. Pirates and the Red Sox. Red Sox break the 5-game skid yesterday. They are taking on the Pirates. Pirates have had it not so good of late. You're on the Red Sox here or the Pirates?
I like the Pirates at a nice money line price here. Home dog here, Bubba Chandler, and the way he's pitched, especially his last 5 at PNC. Pirates have won 4 of those last 5. Jake Bennett has trailed off a little bit, starter for the Red Sox, last 4 in ERA over 5. He's given up 26 hits in 23 innings. Red Sox have looked vulnerable. Toronto exposed him a little bit. I think you get the power pitching of Bubba Chandler and that big offensive outburst for the Pirates in the series finale. I think they get it going here tonight.
All right, and then the Dodgers game tonight. You have a total play in this one. The Dodgers-Brewers, where the Brewers took the first in dramatic fashion yesterday.
Edwin Diaz, thanks for blowing my under 8.5 really. Yesterday. Let's go right back to it, though. Robert Gasser, last 4 starts at 3 ERA, but 3 of his last 4 starts, Gil, have gone under the total. Yoshi Yamamoto on the other side, .88 ERA, last 4 starts. Dodgers only averaging 3.7 runs a game in August. Under 8. Let's rock and roll. Let's see another low-scoring one tonight.
Jensen, thank you for staying late. Appreciate it. And have a catch out of here. Get out of here.
Get a catch.
get off my feed. Thank you, Jensen. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Jensen and Dave Ross buy the books each and every Monday through Friday that precedes us here on the network. Horse racing scandal next. Let's go.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
20 leagues, one mission, just win bets, baby. Your premier source for daily sports betting picks. They break down the data so you can bet with confidence across the entire sports calendar. Scan the QR code or visit justwinbetsbaby.com today and start betting smarter with Just Win Bets Baby. The name says it all. Scan that QR code right there on your screen. Ladies and gentlemen, this man is not only an Eclipse Award winner in his own right and the U.S. analyst at Sky Sports Racing, but he's also the son of legendary disc jockey Peter Fornatale Sr., who used to work at WNEW. It's Peter Fornatale Jr. I don't know if he goes with the Jr., but it's our buddy Peter Fornatale to help us through a horse racing scandal. How you doing, Peter?
I am doing really well. You know, it's always a pleasure for me to be on the airwaves with you. And yeah, not a Jr. We had different middle names, so I've been able to eschew, as you like to say, the Jr. tag.
Very nice. eschewing the junior tag. Okay, I don't want to waste any time because this is a very detailed story. We don't usually on this show go crazy horse racing, or certainly not global horse racing scandals, but you wrote a fabulous piece about this. I mean, it was super detailed. It was everything anybody needed to know, and you were kind enough to give us 10 minutes here. Can you explain it to us, to quote Denzel Washington in the movie Philadelphia, could you explain it to us like I'm a two-year-old? Start from the beginning, speak slowly. This is fascinating.
It's a wild story, and it's a developing story. We just had a big break in it yesterday. Ooh. And this will go on to have many more chapters, but here's where we are. Last Sunday, I was pulling one of my shifts at Sky Sports Racing, and I saw a most unusual betting pattern on a horse that I had just liked off the paper. This horse, very unusual in with bookmakers to see a horse go in a matter of minutes from, you know, 13 to 2, so more than a 6 to 1 shot, all the way down into 2 to 1. You see that kind of thing in tote betting, but not with bookies. And it just filed that away in my brain. Like, that's interesting. Two races later, the same trainer who had sent out that winner sent out another horse that had a similar profile to the one who just won. What was the profile? These were horses shipping in to Saratoga from out of town, off of long layoffs, all associated with one trainer. They did not all run in the name Angel Quiros, but they had all been associated with him in recent races. Well, it turns out it wasn't just those two. There were eight of them overall. Six of them ran on Sunday. Four of them won. And then there were two more horses with this same sort of profile entered on Monday that racing officials ended up scratching. Not quite sure what authority they were able to do that on, but those, the last two did not run. Well, I started digging in, making phone calls, got a lot of gambling contacts around the world, and got the news from somebody familiar with the world of English bookmaking that there had been, surprise, surprise, large wagers connecting all eight of these horses. Parlays in England are not like parlays in the States, but I think this isn't too down the rabbit hole to explain to you and your audience. The way they have parlays over there is you can do bets. There's a bet, for example, called a lucky 15, which is 15 different wagers connecting four legs of a parlay, where you're betting the win, you're betting the what they call the doubles, which is, you know, parlaying two of them, trebles, parlaying three of them, and then another bet parlaying all four. What it turned out was those type of multiple bets were made across all of these different runners. Now, what's fascinating about this is the way these bets were made, they weren't attached to a single liability figure the way that you would expect with a traditional bookmaker. Usually a bookmaker gives you odds on a parlay. You know what those odds are right away. You get a ticket saying, here's what you stand to win. Well, in English bookmaking, especially on these American races, they don't price them up in advance in the same way. They agree to honor certain bets based on what they call SP, which is starting price, basically a closing price, not entirely dissimilar from how tote betting works. So that's how they were able to not detect the fact. And we don't have confirmed numbers on this. What I have confirmed is on Sunday, they were taken for at least mid six figures. Some estimate it way higher than that. And that had those horses won on Monday, the last two legs of the parlay, that liability would have gone into the millions. But because of the way these bets were placed, you don't have to bet a whole lot. You don't have to outlay more than 50 or 100 pounds to get to those kind of numbers if you do it cleverly like they did. Apparently, it was across multiple betting shops. There were American tourists. They had American IDs, and they were able to bet these relatively small multiple bets, 50 or 100 were the estimates I heard on the size of the bets being made, but they accumulated to where they were on the hooks for millions of dollars. Stories about other money being bet offshore, etc. I haven't heard any confirmation of that, but I can confirm that these bookies in London were hit pretty hard.
Let me interrupt and then I'll let you riff some more, but a few follow-up questions. You already answered my first one, which is if those horses were allowed to run on Monday and won, how much more would it have been? You already answered it would have gone into the stratosphere, into the millions. Angel Quiros, the trainer in question, does he have a nefarious background of any kind?
Well, this is where it gets really fascinating, and it relates right to the new development in the story that that I'm going to tell you about right now, which is when I researched him, he didn't have any suspicious positives in his past. But just yesterday, it became public knowledge that there was a dirty test for one of his horses, an out of competition test on a horse back on July 10th. And this is where it gets really fascinating, and we're hitting a moving target. I don't know why that wasn't made public until yesterday. I do believe that information is supposed to be released sooner than that, but this is where we're getting into the weeds and have to figure out all the particulars. But it makes you wonder, did he know he was going to get popped for a dirty test and decided to put this coup into action, or whoever he's working with? We can't say. It's unknowable, but the timing is wild that this guy who did not have any medication, significant medication violations, now we know had one back on July 10th. And it's a weird one too. It's for a substance, I think it's called albuterol, that like everyone on the backside would know you cannot administer to a horse without getting caught. Like there's definitely a lot more to be connected in here. But what we know for sure is these 8 horses, they were set up to run well. 6 of them basically did. 4 of them won. Bookies got taken for a lot of money. And we're left with a whole lot of questions.
I got some of them. Here are some questions. Are the 6 races on Sunday where 4 of those 6 won? And by the way, I love the defense. Hey, these 2 didn't. I'm not doing anything wrong. Were they in a short span of time, right? Like in 90 minutes, all those races were run, right? So it was like this, just a bundle. You couldn't even react to them, correct?
It was kind of crazy. It really was within, I think, a 3-hour window. I have that. I believe that's all detailed in the At the Races yes. piece. It's not sticking to the top of my brain right now. And the nature of it and the nature of these races being parlays was fascinating because, you know, that means as you go on, they became more and more important. And I think part of the reason for that big money on the classic rock horse, I can only assume that's funny enough, since those bets were struck at SP, they didn't know what they were liable for. Some of that win money I saw on that horse was probably from the bookmaking industry itself, because by betting that classic rock horse, they were accomplishing 2 things. They were obviously they're laying off money and recouping some of their liability if that horse wins, but they're also making that starting price smaller by betting more on the horse, therefore reducing their liability while recouping. Nobody from the bookmaking industry is really talking about this on the record. I think that's they're pretty laconic about it, but I have to assume that's what went on there.
2 final questions. Is it your professional opinion or your professional instinct that this is an absolutely this looks terrible? It is an absolutely coordinated attack. 1 trainer, 6 horses. Clearly something nefarious is going on with the juicing or whatever. Obviously, and most of the money being bet in Britain makes it even more difficult for what is already a murky regulatory system with horse racing in the U.S. to even do anything about it. You believe that this is this was absolutely coordinated, you think?
Well, it was definitely coordinated. The question we had until yesterday, you know, there's nothing illegal about betting on your own horses and setting up a horse to run well through legitimate means of training. And while I will admit I never thought that was the most likely scenario, I was sort of hoping for that. You know, I'm a person in life who wants to root for the wise guys, wants to root for the betters right, if they're doing it on the level, right? But I think yesterday's knowledge about the guy popping a positive shows that that's naive, unfortunately. Yeah. And yeah, this is now long. Okay. I mean, it's certain to be nefarious at this point.
And here's the last thing, though, in all of this. So they made their bets. They won their money. You can't get that money back. They've won their money. You can't take the money back right at this point. It's over, right?
I believe that is the case from the money from those English bookmakers. What's happening with any money they supposedly bet offshore or books elsewhere, I'm not certain, but but I think they're going to be able to collect. It sounds like the bookies are going to pay out on that money.
Yeah.
It's a longer conversation as to why that might be the right thing from a commercial point of view.
Peter got
to
run.
It's fascinating, man.
Yeah, thank you so much. That is fascinating. The world of horse racing. Right here on A Numbers Game. Coming back.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander. Kelly Bidlin on assignment in Nashville. See what he comes up with on assignment for the week. We get tweets of beating the book. This is a tough tweet day because I gotta navigate through all the have a catch, play catch tweets here in the morning. Ryan Hyatt today on a very special A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander. Can't wait to hear Chrissy Andrews back on VSiN this morning. Can we get some random lines for old time's sake? Yeah, we should probably do that. Chrissy Andrews, the director of the South Point Sportsbook Hotel Casino here in Las Vegas, going to join us at the top of the hour. Primetime Leon Sanders, yo. Can't wait to hear Chrissy back on your show. Are you going to break it to him that he's not allowed to write book number 5 in deference to your team's quarterback? Ha! Daniel's putting the WTF in the WFT franchise, the WFT, the Washington football team. Bring back Daniel Snyder and Steve Spurrier. Peace and love. No, please don't bring them back, whatever you do. And I just want to say this about the, that it's a bad look for Jaden Daniels. I alluded to this yesterday. Everybody always goes 100% right, 100% wrong, that kind of thing. He's probably 85% wrong. There's a little kernel of truth to his side, which is, yeah, it probably does suck and feels a little disrespectful after you had a 40-touchdown, 4-interception Heisman Trophy winning year that, you know, Brian Kelly went ahead and willy-nilly promised DJ Pickett your number when he was recruiting him. And then it's also kind of petty, I think, that DJ Pickett and his dad insist that they should have 5. So I think there's, you know, Jaden is probably, I get it why he's upset. The problem is it's a terrible way to go. It's a terrible way to go about it because it's his mom involved. And bro, you're a professional quarterback. I know that it bothers you, but like in life, you learn which battles you should pick. And making this one so public and demanding that they take all, you know, likeness down of you, it's just a bad look. So I get it, but man, come on. I think there's a lot of blame to go around in this one, but you're not Joe Burrow, dude. You're not Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow won the national title, and you won the ReliaQuest Bowl, I think, that year. So it's not the same thing. It's fair that you're not treated exactly how Joe Burrow is. Anyway, not a good look for Jaden Daniels and the mom, in my opinion. This is from David Newell. Iga, 10-1 in faraway places 5 minutes ago on the U.S. Open, so you can get a better number than I did. Mark Van Keno, I'll be in attendance for the Tigers today and tomorrow. Tailed the Red Sox last month at 30-1 and got on my Tigers also at 30-1. I'll be there cheering them on. Let's go, Tigers. Let's go is right. This gentleman has a little something to do with the Chicago White Sox. He's here to talk UFC 330 with us. But yes, this is a big series for our bet because, again, Tigers sweep. Tigers in the lead of the AL Central. They take at least 2 of 3. That's their goal, really, to get within 1.5. You want to be that close with 6 weeks left in the season as opposed to the White Sox winning the series. But this man's rooting for the White Sox, I'm sure. It's Jordan Sherwood joining us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at Wood on ESPN 1000. That an accurate reflection, Jordan? You're hoping the White Sox...
Absolutely. Big three games in Detroit. All of a sudden, now it's the Tigers the Sox are looking worried about. And then they got 3 against the Cubbies, the Crosstown Classic. So interesting couple of games for sure. Sox need to figure it out. They've been stumbling a little bit here, and Detroit is hot. So, yes, all eyes on that series starting later today.
All right, UFC 330 in Philadelphia, PA, the city of brotherly shove, as the MMA folks call them. Where does this rank in terms of cards, like in terms of excitement level? Or let's go 1-0 through 10. What number would we give this card?
I think it's a solid 7. You know, it's not great. It's not up there with International Fight Week. It's not up there with the White House card. Or next month, UFC 331 is looking to be in a very deep card. This is I would even call it top heavy because the main event is interesting because it features the pound-for-pound best fighter we have currently fighting in Islam Makhachev, you know, now fighting up at 170s, not at 155 anymore. This is, in my opinion, his first true test at the welterweight division. No discredit to the gentleman, Jack Della Maddalena, that he took the title from. But now he fights a true welterweight, a guy that's going to walk into the cage around 195. And it's going to be a test to his grappling skills, Makhachev's grappling skills, and his ability to get this fight to the ground. I think he should be a sizable favorite. I mean, he's just the better overall fighter. But the way that Machado Gary fights at distance, uses his reach, which he'll have an advantage of, uses his striking, it's going to be difficult for Makhachev to utilize and initiate his grappling. I do like Makhachev to win the fight, but I do like him to win it via decision. I don't think he gets Gary to the ground enough during the fight to look for that submission, and he's not going to outstrike him. But I do think he controls him, wins enough rounds. So I get that minus 360 number to about plus 110, and that's where I believe it'll be Makhachev winning the fight and winning it via decision.
So Makhachev by decision, by the way, on the line itself, Makhachev is minus 360 versus Ian Machado Gary. You said Gary at distance. Is that a and if you look at the old tail of the tape, right, he's 5 inches taller, Gary is, 5-inch reach advantage, 8 years younger. But in the end, it's really, you know, for those of us who love boxing, this feels, correct me if I'm wrong, like Gary just is going to run around this ring, for lack of a better term, and Makhachev's going to look to try to just, you know, get him in a clinch and then go to work on him. What's the scenario? Like, how does Gary even, what's the path for him to even win this? Just to, like, Marvin Hagler this, I guess?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he's going to have to establish his jab. He's going to have to establish a strike. I mean, look, Islam Makhachev is on a 17-fight win streak. That one loss he had before those 17 wins, he was knocked out. So he has been tagged. He has been dropped. He is susceptible. Gary's not a power puncher. He's going to have to land some combinations, but the footwork is fantastic for Gary. He's coming into this prime. There's also a narrative about Makhachev that after this fight, if he wins, he is retiring. Of course, he's the protege of Khabib Nurmagomedov, who many people believe retired early in his career. And Makhachev wants to do the same because now they have their cousin, Usman Nurmagomedov, another Nurmagomedov coming into the UFC, most likely. They don't want to fight each other. They fight at the same weight classes. So that's why I believe that the play is decision. Gary's great. He's a fantastic fighter. I just don't think he's going to be able to prevent the eventual takedowns that will take place in this fight.
Would you say Makhachev is one of the most dominant MMA fighters of all time? Would you put him in that category?
You can't argue again. He's not on my Mount Rushmore. He's not my top four. But he's up there. I mean, the laundry list of fighters he's gone through, the fact he's a two-divisional champion, 17-fight win streak, and those people on that, build-up certainly is in that conversation for top 10, top fighters of all time.
Mackenzie Dern, Jillian Robertson, which precedes that. Robertson, great little stretch of fights here, but this is a step up in competition, isn't it, for her?
Yeah, that for sure. You know, look, Robertson's on a 5-fight win streak. Dern's only on a 2-fight win streak, yet she's the champion. I've been a big fan of Jillian Robertson for quite some time. She's an outstanding grappler when she gets top position. She struggles a little bit in the striking department. She's evolved a little bit over time, but her game plan is taking this fight to the ground and controlling. The issue of that is Mackenzie Dern is probably the most credentialed woman ever to step foot into the octagon, multiple-time Olympian, multiple-time winner outside of the UFC in that regard. And her striking has evolved as well. A little bit of bias because I have a personal relationship with Jillian Robertson's head coach, Dean Thomas. I've been talking to him all week. He believes she's ready. And at that price point right now, that's why I like Jillian Robertson. If it dips a little bit further, I'm probably more so leaning on the Dern side. But if you're telling me that Mackenzie Dern needs to win a 5-round title fight via her striking, That's not an area that I believe in. Jillian Robertson's a bit of a dog. She's going to test herself against Mackenzie Dern on the ground, and I kind of do like that strategy. Don't play it on the feet. Let's see what we can do. So that's why I am on the Jillian Roberts side at that plus money, plus 185.
Yeah, so Makhachev by decision, plus 110 versus Gary, and then Jillian Robertson at this price, plus 185 versus Mackenzie Dern. You have a couple other plays for us before you go.
Yeah. Ribovic against Edson Barboza. Edson Barboza is a fantastic fighter, but he's now 40 years of age. Ribovic is an explosive striker, And, you know, Edson just doesn't have the footwork and the quickness that he once did back when he was, you know, ruling over the lightweight division with his leg kick. So I think Rebush gets the knockout and then a fantastic fight earlier on in the card. Chidi and Jaquani just struggled with weight, so pay attention to that as well. Two explosive strikers, but Joel Alvarez also has ability to get this fight to the ground and get submissions. Chidi and Jaquani is not a grappler. He wants to be on the feet. So I think this fight is a car crash waiting to happen. Let's get the under at 1.5. That's still plus money, plus 107.
Wow. Car crash waiting to happen. That's that always appeals to the listener. Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate it. Real quick before you go, Chicago Bears finish what place in the NFC North?
Oh, they're going to win the North. Let's go. They're going to win.
What answer was I expecting from you?
Exactly. Come on now.
Win the North.
You got me going with Detroit and the Sox. So now, of course, yeah, Bears are winning the division.
We are oppo, as they say in this one, Jordan. Thank you. Appreciate it, man. Jordan Sherwood, right. Everybody, the host of the, I should say, or the MMA advisor at Fat Jack Sports, co-host of the Unnamed MMA podcast. Chrissy Andrews next. Triumphant return on A Numbers Game.